Daniel chapter 2. This is a long reading tonight. I'm going to read the whole chapter. It's 49 verses. But I want to give you the sense of all that's happening here. So, just settle down and we'll relax and we'll read it together and we'll see what the Lord has for us. Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation." The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "The word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn from limb, limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation." They answered a second time and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation." The king answered and said, "I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make the dream known to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation." The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh." Because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree of the king so urgent?" Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give praise and thanks, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you. For you have made known to us the king's matter." Therefore Daniel went in to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus to him, I have found a man, or I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, Are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered the king and said, No wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this. And he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have, more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. You saw, O king, and behold, a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of gold, fine gold, its chest and its arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze. It lay its legs of iron, its feet partially of iron and partially of clay. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation. You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, and the might, and the glory, and into whose hand he has given whatever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the fields, the birds of the heavens, making you rule over them. You are the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. There shall be a fourth kingdom strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partially of potter's clay and partially of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with the soft clay. And the toes of the feet were partially iron and partially clay, so the kingdom shall be partially strong and partially brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with the soft clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, a great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, Truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries. For you have been able to reveal this mystery. Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. We end our reading of God's word. Nebuchadnezzar had come to power in Babylon, and he had exercised a phenomenal campaign, taking territory after territory, city after city. He had overthrown the nation of Syria as the dominant world global power, and he had done so in a very, very brief period of time. He had been brutal in many ways. He had been unforgiving, unrelenting. His army had been ruthless, and they had not left people with a great deal of mercy, but had dealt harshly. He was nonetheless an astute politician, a clear thinker, and we have read in the first chapter how he established this university that was to be used for the building up of individuals from particular nations who would then have a key role in ruling the empire that he was establishing. Daniel and three other young men, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah, had been brought with other noble young men from Jerusalem to Babylon. And they had been enrolled in this university. And Daniel had asserted that whilst he would accept the new situation in his life, that whilst he was willing to engage with the new cultural realities, that there would be a line that would be drawn. And we saw the last Lord's Day evening how that he purposed or resolved in his heart that he would not defile himself with the food that was eating. He was gracious. He was constructive. He was confident in God. And the Lord blessed his stand. We didn't read it, but it says at the closing verses of chapter 1 that the Lord blessed these young men and that they were seen to be healthier than the other young men who had ate the king's food. And that Daniel was a young man who had been given not only wisdom and understanding, but they had been given understanding specifically in all dreams and visions, verse 17 of chapter 1. We now come into the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, we are told, is having dreams. What is going to unfold here is a crisis, a huge crisis. If you're taking notes, that's the first heading you want to have. A huge crisis. It's going to be a personal crisis. It's going to be a personal crisis which is going to affect the entire court, the ruling intelligentsia of Babylon, and a personal crisis which is not only going to affect the entire court, it's going to have potentially profound ramifications for the entire nation of Babylon. This is not a small thing. This is not Nebuchadnezzar getting frustrated about a simple failure on the part of one of his crown officials. This is something that has shaken Nebuchadnezzar to the core and is going to have drastic consequences for everyone in the nation. We read that Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. It wasn't just one dream. It was a number of dreams. Here is a man who is affluent, powerful, gifted, intelligent. A man who has no worries and no concerns. Whatever Nebuchadnezzar wants, Nebuchadnezzar can have. There's no limitations in terms of the amount of money that he has. It's nice to be in that situation sometimes. We were away for a few days in England there, and we took a cheap caravan, and it was nice to be able to go out in the evening and spend a few pounds having a meal so that Heather couldn't cook. Actually, I enjoyed one night. I'm not a miser. But I thought, you know, we haven't stayed in the most expensive caravan. You knew that by the fact you're outside the caravan, you opened the door and nearly hit the caravan next door because you were so tight together. But, you know, we were able to buy eggs and bacon and sausages, and I didn't burn them all. I'm telling you that so you'll understand that I cooked it. Well, that will endear you to me to you more. And there was this nice to be able to go out in the evening and buy some of that, to have a few pounds just to do that. This man didn't have to worry about ever having to be concerned about money. He had it. He had a vision of what he was going to do. He had a plan of where he was going to go, where this nation was going to be taken. And he had a purpose and the army and the resources to meet that plan. And yet we read that his experiences of the night caused him to be deeply troubled. So deeply troubled that his sleep leaves him. He is not able to sleep at night. Such is the disturbance caused within his heart and his mind by these dreams that he is awakening up in the early hours of the evening or morning. And he cannot get back to sleep. He is deeply, deeply perturbed. Deeply, deeply disturbed. And no amount of wealth, no amount of comfort, no amount of power, no amount of ease, no amount of empire building could alleviate Nebuchadnezzar from this dark shadow that had cast its impression over his life. He could not get away. And this crisis that had a deeply unsettling effect on him left him incredibly insecure. We read that he commands the various wise men, the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, to come to his presence. He confides in them, verse 3. He tells them that he has had a dream. It is a dream that is recurring in his night sleep. He tells them that his spirit is troubled. He wants to know what the interpretation of the dream is. This is something that has taken this man to a place in his life where it is causing disruption to his ability to engage in his daily functioning. He's not able to go about the affairs of the nation. It's not that he's waking up in the morning and saying, I had a bad dream last night, confiding in the wife or confiding in some court official, and then putting it to bed and going about the affairs of the day. This dream, this recurring dream, will not leave him alone. It is dogging his mind. It is dogging his heart. It is dogging his spirit. It is exacerbating him. And it is drawing from him all the energy of his life, emotional energy. It's drawing from him physical energy. He is not getting sleep. He is deeply unsettled and unhappy by what is going on. And he cannot get resolution or peace in his life. He is willing to confide in these men concerning the troubled nature of his spirit. Now that's an amazing thing. That here is this man who is so powerful, so eminent, and yet he's prepared to open up to these men and say, I am deeply unhappy. I'm not able to cope with this. This shows you the depths to which this had taken control of his life. They come to him and they give him the eulogy that is normally given to the king. O king, live forever. They ask him, which is an unexpected request, tell your servants the dream and we will show the interpretation. Tell us what the dream is and we'll interpret it for you. The king responds and he says, the word from me is firm. In other words, don't try and negotiate here. Don't try and talk to me about this. He says, if you don't make known to me the dream and the interpretation, then you shall be torn limb from limb and your houses shall be laid to ruin. Not an idle threat given the man that was giving this statement. They knew that he had the power. They knew that he was a monarch who had all the power that he had at his disposal. All he had to do was say to them, take them out and have them destroyed. As we saw last Lord's Day, and we shall see in coming weeks, he had this furnace prepared for people who he didn't like, who he would throw into. He also had a pit that the lions were not fed in, that he would throw his enemies into, and they would be gouged to death, eaten. We'll read later on in the book of how there was those who were thrown into it, and before their bodies hit the ground, they were dead. Their bones were broken, and their bodies were torn to pieces, torn to shreds. This man, when he says to them, my word is firm, he's sending out a signal right away. This is not something we're going to discuss. This is not something we're going to debate. I'm telling you, I want to hear the dream, and I want to hear the interpretation of the dream, or else you will suffer the consequences. There's also the reward. If you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. There's a threat, a consequence. They, of course, respond, and they say, but we can't interpret the dream unless we've got the knowledge of what the dream is. Nebuchadnezzar's not happy. He thinks they're trying it on. He says, I know with certainty that you're trying to gain time because you see that the word is firm for me. He says, if you don't give me what I want, then I'm going to deal with you. I'm going to deal with you. In fact, such is the unsettled nature of his mind that he begins to see a conspiracy theory. He says to them in the 9th verse, you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. He is so disturbed that everyone is now against him. Everyone's against him. Although he's asking them for an unreasonable thing, he's asking them for something that doesn't make any sense as they go on and make a point. There's no one on the earth who can say this. Only the gods can answer this, and the gods are not here in flesh. Such is their exacerbation now at the situation. So here he is, angry, annoyed, frustrated, not getting sleep. The dream is not being answered. He has warned them. He has given them the consequences if they don't do it. He has given them the reward, the promise of the reward if they do it. And then he issues the decree. We read in verse 12, Filled with rage and anger and furious, he commands that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. And so men are sent out to undertake the decree. Had this decree been fulfilled, the entire wise men of Babylon would have been wiped out, and that would have had huge ramifications for the nation and the empire of Babylon. It would have affected many people's lives. This is a huge crisis. But this huge crisis is not just a huge crisis for Nebuchadnezzar and these wise men, it's a huge crisis for Daniel and his contemporaries. For they are caught up in this. We read in verse 13 that Daniel and his companions are sought out in order to be killed. Here we will see the difference of how the godly man deals with a crisis compared with the godless approach to a crisis. There is clarity of thought that comes to Daniel. Confusion reigns for Nebuchadnezzar. There is clarity of thought where Daniel is concerned. And in the brief time left to me, I want you to see how Daniel responds in this crisis and to seek to think about that in your own life. Because Daniel reacts cautiously to begin with. He goes to the captain of the guard, Arioch, the king's guard, and he asks him what the problem is. He is informed of what the problem is. And then he asks for an opportunity to go and speak to the king in order that he may have time to establish the interpretation of the dream. He thinks Daniel is not paralyzed by this situation. It's one thing we saw last Lord's Day and the preceding weeks. Daniel, as a man of God, thinks ahead. He thinks ahead. He prepares. There's not the aimless confusion that dominates the ungodly way of life. Satan is the master of chaos. Satan is the one who brings destruction. And Satan comes into our lives, he doesn't bring clarity. Satan brings disruption, destruction, degradation, chaos, anxiety, and frustration. And the godly man that Daniel is, he does not respond like the ungodly. He doesn't become unsettled and insecure and confused, angry and resentful. Daniel thinks. He stops and he thinks. And he considers the way forward. He considers the way forward. And he says, the first thing that I must do is I must speak to the king and buy myself the necessary time to then go and speak to the King of Kings. And having bought that time, Daniel then goes, verse 17, to the house where he is staying with Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. And he speaks to them and he calls them to get down on their knees to seek mercy from God concerning this mystery. Daniel takes the issue to God. Daniel knows that he doesn't have the ability to answer the question himself. He doesn't know what the dream is, far from knowing what the interpretation of the dream is. And if Nebuchadnezzar has not told his wise men and his sorcerers and his enchanters what the dream is, he's certainly not going to tell Daniel what the dream is, this young man who's just out of university. And so Daniel takes this matter to God. Note what Daniel doesn't do. Daniel doesn't ask God to tell him what the dream is. Daniel doesn't ask God to tell him what the interpretation of the dream is. Daniel asks his contemporaries to plead with God for mercy. Mercy. He throws himself upon the mercy of God. He knows that God knows what the dream is. He knows that God knows what the interpretation of the dream is. But Daniel comes to them and he says, we must ask God, we must seek the face of God for mercy. That God will deal with us and deal with these wise men in the way that is wise as far as he is concerned. And surely there has to be something in that for you and I. There has to be something here, not just in his cautious approach initially, not just in his confidence in God, but then his coming to God and not saying to God, this is what I want, and you give it to me or else. But he comes to God and he says, God, be merciful to us. Be merciful to us. He trusts God enough to know that God will deal with them righteously. Is there something in that for us tonight? That we should come to God, trusting God, and saying to God, this is an impossible situation. I don't know the answer to this. I don't know where this is leading me. But I know that you know where it's leading to. I know that you know the end from the beginning from the end. And what we're asking you, God, here is that you would be merciful. Merciful to us in this situation. That you would remember that we are your people. And that you would remember that you have placed us in this situation. Daniel and his contemporaries have been placed in Babylon for a reason. Daniel knew that. Daniel came to understand that God had brought them from Jerusalem and Judah to Babylon for a reason. Daniel had been given understanding of visions and dreams for a reason. He understood when they engaged with this community and this body of people and how they had excelled, he could see that God had them there for a reason. And he was saying to God, you have us here for a reason. Be merciful to us that we might fulfill the reason why you've placed us in this situation. So often we come to God and we want him to tie it up all nice and neatly so that we will get out of it in the most cost-free, suffering-less way, the painless way possible. But as we've seen in our modern studies, our morning studies of how the devil came to Jesus, it's the devil that owns the painless way. It's the devil that offers the suffering free way. It's the devil that offers the way of least resistance. But when the devil offers that, he's not offering us what's best. He's offering us that which will lead to the end of destruction. And when these men come to God, they're praying to God, God, please be merciful to us. We know that you know the situation. And so they pray and they labor before God. And God reveals the vision to Daniel. And Daniel runs off to Nebuchadnezzar right away. And Nebuchadnezzar says to Nebuchadnezzar, I've got the dream. I know what the dream is. I can tell you what the dream is. It's not what happened. That's not what happened. He doesn't run to Nebuchadnezzar. He goes to God. He goes in thanksgiving to God. But surely so many people's lives depend on the interpretation of this dream. There are men who are sitting on the point of death. There are women who are going to be left widows. Surely Daniel should be not sparing a moment to run to the presence of Nebuchadnezzar and say to him, call off the dogs. Call off the men of war. Call off those who will put the wise men and the enchanters and the magicians to death. He doesn't. He goes to God. He blesses God. And he praises God. Because he sees it as God who rules over all. It's God who raises up kings and sets them down. It's God who gives the wisdom and the understanding. It's God who reveals the deep and hidden things. It's God who knows what's in the darkness. The light dwells in God, and it's to God that thanksgiving and praise should be given. It's God who has given the wisdom. It's God who has given the knowledge. It is God who has given the mind. He is so, so taken up with God that even in the midst of this most horrific crisis, he stops and he communes with God. Why? Because it's God he has to deal with. He knows that God will deal with Nebuchadnezzar. But he has to deal with God. How often in the crisis of our lives, we run to sort it out. And only at the end, when we're at the end of our tether, do we turn to God. When we turn to God, we ask Him, please sort it out. Please sort it out. And if God is merciful and He's quick to sort it out, then we run on with our lives. We just run on with our lives. Why had Daniel such clarity? Give me a few more minutes. Why had Daniel such clarity? Why was Daniel so enabled to go to God? Because as we shall see in our future studies in this book, Daniel was a man who had built his relationship with God. Daniel was a man who came to God every day of his life. God was part of Daniel's life, not just in the crisis. God was part of Daniel's life every single day. And so when this crisis was spreading throughout the royal court, Daniel didn't panic. He didn't panic because he had confidence. Confidence in God. He believed in God. He communed with God every day of his life. And so when the world was falling down round him, the king was confused and angry. The king was unsettled and insecure. Men were running home to their wives and saying, "We're doomed, I'm dead, I'm finished. There's no way we can answer the king. We can't give him what he wants. It's not humanly possible." Men were kissing their wives and saying, "This could be our last night together." When the whole royal court and all the wise men were in utter chaos, Daniel is measured. Daniel has clarity. Because Daniel has a confidence because of Daniel's relationship with God. That's the reason Daniel goes and speaks to God. It's not suddenly that Daniel wakens up this day and says, "Oh, I remember that I believe in God and I must go to God." And that's the reality of life. It's that daily plodding with God. It's that daily communion with God that builds a solid relationship with God. That when the crisis comes, it's not a descent into chaos. It's a rising up to clarity. It doesn't mean that Daniel knew all the answers. He didn't. But he knew where to go to. And I would encourage you to keep building your relationship with God. To keep laboring at that relationship. Keep inclining your heart to God. Keep seeking after God. So that when the crisis hits, you can go to God and say, God, I know you. I know you. I've talked with you. You love me. I love you. Be merciful. Please be merciful. I know that you sent your Son to die for my salvation. I know the immensity of your love. Please be merciful. And if God answers, then you go and say to God, how wonderful. How amazing. What a God you are. When all around us are losing their heads, we have clarity of purpose because of God's love for us and our love for God. Daniel's clarity because of his love for God and his walking with God saved hundreds of lives. Hundreds of lives. And elevated him to a position of real prominence. Will you please work at building your relationship with God? Will you please pursue after him? Will you please work out your own salvation? For your own good, for the good of your family, for the good of this church, for the good of people in this community. Will you work at it? Will you work at it? Will you build it for God's glory ultimately? Amen.